This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The race for the U.S. Senate seat held by Kay Hagan takes some new twists and turns. Republican challenger Tom Tillis splits his time between campaign events and trying to broker a budget compromise in the North Carolina legislature. Meanwhile, Hagan tries to sidestep internal political divisions in the state Democratic Party. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us, as he does on Fridays, to talk about the latest political news. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Tell us about this. Kay Hagan, kind of between a rock and a hard place. We were focusing on the tensions and frictions in the Republican Party, but the Democrats have fights of their own to settle, don't they?
They do, but I mean, if I could be either one, I'd rather have Kay Hagan's problems than Tom Tillis's problems, and we'll talk about Tillis in a minute. But right now, I mean, there are internal problems in the Democratic Party in North Carolina. A lot of Democrats feel that the state chair lacks leadership qualities, and there's just a lot of distrust between the state party in Raleigh and the Democratic Senatorial Committee in Washington. So what Kay Hagan is doing is she started up her own little fiefdom, in a sense, that she's still going to raise a lot of money. She's going to still work with people in Wake County, basically out of Raleigh. And, you know, it shouldn't really affect her race, what's going on with the state party. And after all, she has like $8.7 million in the bank, far more than Tom Tillis does. So money is not her problem. The real problem for the Democrats maybe is that in 2016, when the presidential race is up, and of course, North Carolina has been so close the last couple of times, and a disunited Democratic Party cannot help the Democratic nominee in 2016. But right now, it ultimately doesn't affect Hagan that much.
On the other hand, the budget battle in the North Carolina legislature is a battle royale and one with a key absence, Tom Tillis. Not much in evidence in the legislature. Tell us about his
ordeal. This is what's killing him, and I mean, he probably knew this was going to happen when he got into the race, but never did he think that this short session of the legislature would go on as long as it is and as contentious as it is, because with Governor McCrory and the Senate battling each other, and in many personal terms, I mean, Tillis is almost like caught in the middle of this. He wants this to be done. He wants a budget passed. He wants to give, you know, teachers a pay raise, but maybe not as much as the Senate wants. And they're just fighting among themselves. And so while he's trying to concentrate on his race against Kay Hagan, he's still having to deal with these budget woes in the legislature. And I think it's taking a toll on him, not only in fundraising, because he's not raising that much money because he's not having time to fundraise, but it's also hurting him in the polls right now. If you think people hate the Congress in Washington, well, a lot of North Carolinians are not happy with what's going on in Raleigh in the state legislature. And Tillis is paying the price.
And Tom Tillis and the House are on the governor's side, and the governor's not polling very well either. So having the governor on your side doesn't really help you, or apparently is not helping Tom Tillis. Would I be right in saying that?
You are right, because McCrory's fighting with the Senate President Phil Berger. Maybe Phil Berger's upset about his son losing and he's going to take it out on McCrory. But, I mean, there's so many differences among the Republicans on taxes, on election reform, on immigration, and certainly finishing the budget, that McCrory and Berger seem to be just shouting at each other at both times. You know, you think back to Bob Dole when he was running for president in 1996. The reason he quit the Senate in the middle of it is because he didn't want to be tarred with the Newt Gingrich Congress. He wanted to run on his own and not have to defend everything that's going on in Washington. Unfortunately for Tom Tillis, he has to defend what is getting done or not getting done, shall we say, in Raleigh.
And you talked about the money. As you said, Hagan is outpacing Tom Tillis in fundraising. But Tom Tillis has some well-heeled donors, including the Koch family.
Yeah, I mean, let's not feel sorry for Tom Tillis right now. The Koch brothers, I think they're looking at North Carolina more than any other Senate race in the country. It's very important. Charles Koch, I just read that Charles Koch, his wife, his son, his daughter-in-law, the pet dog, and their goldfish all gave money to Tom Tillis. So Tom Tillis is not going to be hurting for money. But again, for a seat that the Republicans thought would be theirs for the taking in November, it's turning out to be much tougher. And Hagan is doing a tremendous advantage in raising all this money.
This is going to be an expensive race, isn't it, Ken? Because both the Democrats and the Republicans care about this one.
The most expensive Senate race in the country, probably because it's of all the most populated states that have these kind of a tough contentious Senate race, North Carolina is number one.
All right, let's talk about campaign finance in a House race, the 2nd District. Democratic challenger Clay Aiken outraised Republican incumbent Renee Elmers. We're told it's a safe seat. We had been told there's no way the Democrats going to win, and yet here's Clay Aiken raising more money than Renee Elmers. What's going on there?
Well, I would never call it, I will not say that the Democrats don't have a shot in it. Of course, the district has been made more Republican since the last round of redistricting, and Renee Elmers seems to have a United Party behind her. But having said that, Clay Aiken has not only outraised her in the second quarter, but he's taking very little money from political action committees. He's getting the most from individuals, whereas Elmers seems to be relying on PACs more than ever. So the thing is, ultimately, I'm not sure how much the difference will be in the money because Elmers has a lot of money in the bank because she's been raising it for so long, and Aiken only got in the race late in the cycle. So on hand, Aiken has about $200,000 in the bank, and Elmers has over $400,000. I don't know if you need much more money than that, but the fact that Aiken is out raising an incumbent may send a signal to some Democrats around the country and in Washington that maybe this seat is winnable after all.
And that he's raising it at the grassroots level, as you say, individual donations rather than PAC money. And as you said, there really is never a safe seat, particularly in an off year when voter turnout is so low. Could we be seeing a groundswell of popular support and therefore maybe a change in kind of voter turnout that might flip the district?
Well, if this were a presidential year, and of course everybody talks about in presidential years when Obama was on the ballot, and we saw this in 2008 when Kay Hagan was first elected, maybe there'll be a larger African-American turnout. But that's the key here. I mean, if the Democrats can get black turnout in a midterm election, that'll be ultimately the battle. Suburban women and African-American voters, if Clay Aiken could take advantage of whatever Kay Hagan and her organization is putting together, sure, it's winnable. I mean, we've seen surprises before. Right now, my gut tells me that Elmers does win. It's hard to see that seat that was drawn to elect a Republican handily going Democratic, but stranger things have happened.
And lots of big
surprises. Having me on your show.
That's a shock. And then there's some big surprise off-year and not off-year, but replacement elections that have really shocked us over the past couple of months, too. A political junkie, Ken Rudin, is with me on the State of Things. Ken, let's talk about some stuff that is happening here in North Carolina that indicates movement on issues across the nation. The North Carolina legislature voted to remove and revise Common Core standards, educational standards. Seems to be a political hot potato on the federal level as well. Why are politicians, Ken, at the national stage so hesitant to engage on these education issues? Used to be an easy one.
Well, Common Core is not easy. I mean, if you talk to Republicans like Jeb Bush, they say, look, we need to change the standards of how our educators are teaching and our kids are learning. Basically, kids are not learning good. You know what I mean? And so Jeb Bush is one of those few Republicans who were pushing that. But it's become an ideological tug of war. There are a lot of conservatives who don't like, they resent the intrusion of the federal government in it. And while the Democrats say, look, improving teaching standards is great, but right now it's affecting states like North Carolina because McCrory signed the bill this week, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. And, it really sends a lot of confusion into how teachers are going to teach and how students are going to get taught. But really this is less about anything other than, this ideological battle saying that government should not be coming into our classrooms, and Republicans have just been battling it. So it's not just North Carolina. It's states like Oklahoma and South Carolina, other states where conservative governors are saying we want the federal government out of our classrooms and we'll do it our way. So again, if anything, it's the kids and the teachers who pay the price.
Here's another big story that sowed confusion across the land. Two opposing Affordable Care Act rulings by courts this week here in North Carolina. The Fourth Circuit upheld the provision, and so things will stay the same here. But let's take a look at the national level. Is Barack Obama hurt by these two decisions?
Well, the first decision, the Raleigh decision came second. The first one was the D.C. Circuit Court, which voted 2-1 to say that, a lot of these things must be overturned. And people said, oh, my goodness, is this the end of Obamacare? Is this, what about all the investments we have? What about all the subsidies we were supposed to get? Is it going to be taken away? But then we saw what happened in Raleigh, and I basically what happened in D.C. is that it was a subpanel of this court that voted 2-1. The Obama administration is going to go to court and say that let the whole D.C. Circuit Court vote. And because there are more Democratic appointees on that court than Republican, we think that 2-1 thing is very temporary. But a lot of people just really panic, saying, is this the end of Obamacare? Is this the thing that the Republicans couldn't do at the ballot box? Are they doing this in the courts? My guess is that while it did make the front page headlines on Tuesday and scared a lot of people, I think ultimately that even if the Supreme Court gets involved, they're not going to tear this down. The subsidies will remain. And but it was, for a brief time, it was pretty scary.
Well, and just to clarify that while North Carolina and Raleigh are in the Fourth Circuit, in fact, the Fourth Circuit is in Richmond. The D.C. court was the other court that ruled against the subsidies. And Ken, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin, political junkie. Find more on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a conversation about growing childhood poverty in North Carolina. You'll hear it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.